This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
Hello and welcome to LGIM Talks for this special episode to mark the publication of our 2024 Climate Impact Pledge report. Here with me today to discuss the pledge and give a temperature check on our engagement efforts are Stephen Beer, Anna Harai, and Christy Rodriguez from our investment stewardship team. Thanks for joining me today. So to kick things off, Stephen, what is the Climate Impact Pledge and what does it aim to do?
So the Climate Impact Pledge is the key way that LGIM encourages companies to reduce climate change risks and transition to a net zero economy. We believe climate change is an important systemic risk to clients' portfolios. And through the Climate Impact Pledge, we're aiming to help mitigate those risks. Now, we hold securities in thousands of companies in the funds we manage for our clients. And we engage through our investment stewardship team as universal owners, aiming to reduce systemic risks across funds and markets. Now, when we're engaging with companies, through the Climate Impact Pledge, we're outlining our expectations of the information we want them to disclose to us and the actions that we want them to take to reduce those climate risks. And our engagement comes with consequences. If companies don't meet the minimum expectations that we have or the red lines that we outline, we can use our votes at AGMs or in some cases, over time, some funds can come to divest from companies. And with the Climate Impact Pledge itself, we're assessing over 5,000 companies across 20 climate critical sectors. And based on the data we had at the end of 2023, we estimate that that means the pledge covers around 86% of the total carbon emissions that's attributable to LGIM's corporate debt and equity holdings. Now, these companies that we're assessing and engaging with are in sectors we believe are climate critical, where action here would do a lot to help shift the global economy and markets in the right direction. And we're working to help reduce this systemic risk in some of the most important areas of the market, covering both the supply and the demand for energy.
Great, thanks, Stephen. So obviously a key piece for us as a responsible investor. So how does it work in practice and how do you engage with these companies?
Well, our approach is twofold, and that means we can get the benefits of scale and depth. So first of all, we have a quantitative approach where we assess companies in those sectors against a range of climate metrics to judge what progress they've made, and also, if you like, it sets a standard that we want them to meet. And that outcome comes in terms of climate impact ratings that we publish on our website. And where possible, we write to companies outlining our expectations and pointing them to our website where they can see our assessment, they can see the metrics that sit behind it. Now, where those companies are not meeting minimum standards, they're at risk of voting sanctions from us. And that's normally a vote against the chair at the AGM. And again, where possible, we contact companies to draw their attention to that fact. This year, we've contacted many more companies than previously. So the Climate Impact Pledge is not only assessing thousands of companies, through it we're also engaging on climate with many more than before. But there's a second aspect to our approach as well, and that's qualitative. Here we identify potential dial mover companies in those 20 climate critical sectors. These are companies where, based on their size and on our Climate Impact Pledge ratings, as well as where they are in their industries and geographies, where we believe they've got the potential to spur action from their peers in the same sectors. So if they take action on climate, that's good for them. It's good for the wider market, the systemic risks we're talking about, but it might also, and we hope it will, encourage change in their sectors, set a good standard, a new standard for change. So we're choosing those companies so that we can engage with them directly. And we've targeted just over 100 companies over the past year for those kind of conversations. When we look at those companies, when we're talking to them, we are looking for them to have strategies that are aligning with net zero, and we're looking for sufficient emissions reduction targets. And we're very transparent. Just as with, the publication of our climate impact ratings, the way we're assessing companies overall, So we're very transparent about the kind of questions we're likely to ask these companies. They're outlined in sector guides that we publish on our website. That means that we're very clear and public about the actions that need to be taken across those sectors. And those guides also include our red lines, actions we really do expect companies in those sectors to take. And if they don't meet red lines, then over time, that might lead to vote sanctions at AGMs, and maybe even over time for some funds that are able to do so, it could lead to divestment. So this is how the Climate Impact Pledge works: a quantitative assessment with engagement and voting consequences, a deeper dive engagement with meetings to encourage change in companies and sectors. And we believe the end result is the largest thematic engagement program in LGIM on one of the most important issues affecting potential future risks for clients.
Great. Thank you, Stephen. So, Christy, I'd like to ask you a question. What's new about the pledge in 2024, and what's been the focus this year so far?
There are three main things we focus this year. The first one is expanding our engagement outreach. The second one, raising the floor for emission-intensive sectors. And the third one, putting the spotlight on companies' progress. As we expanded our universe in our last cycle to 5,000 plus companies, our aim this year was to engage with most of the companies covered by the pledge. This led to the launch of our largest engagement campaign in April this year, where we wrote to the chair of the board of over half of the 5,000 plus assessed companies under our pledge quantitative assessment tool. So we communicated with approximately 2,600 companies, compared to over 1,500 contacted in 2023. This is the largest outreach we have undertaken to date on any ESG engagement topic. In the report, we outline the content of these letters and key outputs of the outreach we have received so far. In the report, we outline the content of the letters and key outputs of the outreach we have received so far. We believe this expanded outreach will not only help raise market standards with regards to climate strategies and disclosure, but also improve climate data availability and accuracy across our holdings, as we included a call to action for companies to engage with relevant data providers. Second focus of the year was to raise the floor for emission-intensive sectors. We wanted to target the sectors that are core to the energy transition, which is key to achieving wider industry decarbonization. And to do this, from this year, in addition to our minimum standards, we have introduced baseline expectations in that will drive our climate-related voting for emission-intensive sectors, such as oil and gas, mining and utilities. If a company fails to meet this, we will apply a vote against the re-election of the chair of its board where possible. We expect oil and gas companies to have disclosed their methane emissions at least once over the past 3 years. This is because methane, while short-lived in the atmosphere than carbon dioxide, is a more potent greenhouse gas. Therefore, we believe it should be a company's responsibility to calculate and manage methane emissions. We expect mining companies and electric utilities to refrain from making any new investments in thermal coal mining or power generation expansion. This aligns with the IEA's net zero emissions scenario. While it takes some time to phase out thermal coal use, any new investments today is incompatible with the goal of achieving net zero by 2050. As a result of this change, we have identified over 100 companies in these sectors that are subject to vote sanctions at their AGMs. And lastly, this year we're putting the spotlight on companies' progress. We wanted to showcase the significant progress companies have made in their practices and disclosure over the past 12 months of engagement by introducing in their report an improvers list. Companies such as Fortum and Nucor are showcased. We've also wanted to evidence outcomes related to divestments over time. And this is why we have included a table noting companies that have been previously divested from applicable funds that have made some progress, such as Loblaw and Invitation Homes.
Great. Thanks, Christy. That's a lot to be going on with your team. So, Anna, I'd like to ask you this question. What are your overall impressions on how we're progressing to net zero? How are individual sectors doing? Which are the ones that are progressing the best and which are lagging behind?
Well, based on both quantitative assessment and qualitative assessment, we were encouraged to see progress overall, but the pace of progress seems to vary by country and sector. When we look at the climate impact pledge ratings of over 5,000 companies in 20 sectors, we saw improvements across different themes. And these include climate disclosure and scope 3 reporting, net zero ambition, climate governance, and climate lobbying disclosure. We have added climate lobbying disclosure as one of the red lines for all sectors in our direct engagement, and it is also one of the minimum standards company needs to meet to avoid climate vote sanction. So it's great to see an improvement in disclosure across the pledged universe. We also co-filed the shareholder proposal at Nippon Steel on this topic this year. So we hope to see further transparency over direct and indirect climate lobbying activities across the board. Thinking about our direct engagement with over 100 dial mover companies, our analysis shows that 81% of companies disclose a net zero or carbon neutrality targets, and this is an increase from 71% during the last engagement cycle. None of the oil and gas companies we engage directly with have a comprehensive net zero target covering scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions, so their targets only cover scope 1 and 2. In contrast, transport sectors such as auto and airline had a higher proportion of companies with comprehensive net zero targets. Our expectation is that all companies set a net zero emission target that covers scope 1, 2, and material scope 3 emissions. In terms of our climate vote sanction, oil and gas, electric utilities, property, insurance, and mining sectors were the laggards, as they had the highest proportion of companies identified for vote sanction. Again, transport sectors such as auto, shipping, and airline sectors were ahead of other sectors since they had the lowest proportion of companies not meeting our minimum standards. So to sum up, companies in emission-intensive sectors tended to perform poorly while the companies in transport sectors performed better than others. These insights are useful when thinking about our assessment framework and evaluating if some of our expectations need updating, with some sectors decarbonizing faster than others.
So we often use the phrase engagement with consequences. What's the thinking behind that and how does it work in practice?
Well, LGM has engaged with our investee companies for a long time, acting as a steward for our clients. Since the inception of Climate Impact Pledge back in 2016, on the back of the Paris Agreement, we have applied a model of engagement with consequences on climate change. What this means in practice is that if after a period of engagement, we do not see sufficient action or improvements from companies, we can apply consequences such as voting sanction or divestment. Divestment is applied in selective funds that are able to do so, which can include both active and index funds. It is important to point out that only the dial mover companies that we engage with directly could potentially be subject to divestment. So this only applies to our qualitative assessment, as Stephen mentioned earlier. I think we can all agree that engaging with a clear escalation pathway is more effective and impactful in achieving the outcome than engaging with no consequence. How it works in practice is that after the first year of engagement, companies could receive a vote against the board chair or equivalent if they do not meet our red lines. We also declare our voting intention publicly ahead of AGMs when we think that further escalation is needed or the resolution warrants attention from other stakeholders. After engaging for a few years, and if the companies do not sufficiently meet our red lines and there's been no progress, they could be proposed for divestment. So this is a multi-year process, and we want to make sure we're being fair and giving companies sufficient time to address our concerns. Having media coverage on these activities also help to amplify our message and put pressure on companies that are not meeting our expectation or simply not moving fast enough. I also want to highlight that divestment is not the end of the conversation as far as we are concerned. Sometimes it can lead to the start of the conversation, as we've seen with some of the companies on our divestment list. It's also important to note that even where some funds divest, other funds managed by LGM will hold shares in these companies. So we will continue to engage with these companies and vote at their shareholder meetings. And although we have a range of stewardship tools, such as voting, policy engagement, and for certain funds, divestment, we don't want to focus only on sticks. The ultimate aim for us is to encourage companies to improve their climate strategy and resilience, see these companies come off the divestment list. This is why we highlighted some of the progress we've seen from companies in the report, as Christine mentioned earlier. We want to shed light on progress made by our investee companies.
Really interesting, Anna. Thank you. Christy, what are the key findings of the engagement this year so far?
While we see different challenges and opportunities in each sector, we have identified some common narratives across all sectors and continue to tailor our engagement based on our findings. We've noticed, for example, that Scope 3 disclosure is overall improving, but target setting for Scope 3 emissions has been rather slow. So even when companies start disclosing their Scope 3 emissions, it might not cover key material categories as data collection continues to be a challenge given supply chain complexities. It is our view that Scope 3 is a vital tool for measuring decarbonization progress at the systems level. Hence, we continue to advocate for improved and standardized Scope 3 disclosure. We also noted how regulation, incentives, and carbon taxes continue to be key drivers of decarbonization across sectors. It was good to hear directly from companies that they utilize internal carbon prices to determine the viability of projects and investment planning. For instance, some of the companies we engaged with mentioned the role of the Fuel EU Maritime Regulation, accelerating the pace of fleet renewal in Europe, or the role of the EU Carbon Border Adjustment Mechanism, or CBAM, influencing decarbonization of the cement industry. This gives us confidence to continue to focus our engagement in climate lobbying alignment. We also face challenges or difficulties of engaging with state-owned companies as the pace of transition is somewhat more directly linked to the government's and regulations policy stance. KEPCO and Air China, both on our divestment list, are good examples of this. This is why we believe that corporate engagement as well as policy engagement are required to move the needle. Based on our findings, we continue to adapt our engagement approach in line with what we have learned. For instance, we're looking to introduce bespoke engagement approaches, especially for state-owned companies, and incorporate regional market-specific considerations.
Great, thank you. So, Stephen, the pledge is more than just communicating with companies, but supporting them and helping them reach net zero. What are we doing to help investee companies, and what value can we add here?
Well, first of all, I think I'd say that the communication itself is of great value. By that, I mean the transparent approach that we adopt. By publishing our expectations, by publishing our ratings, by showing the metrics that we're using to get to those ratings, and by showing what our minimum standards are, we're not just communicating with individual companies. We're communicating to the wider market what we think companies need to do to align with a lower carbon or net zero world. Now, that is a part of our effort to help reset the framing for, you know, on which these conversations can take place. So that in itself, you know, we believe has got great value. Secondly, I'd say that, you know, when we engage with companies, and particularly when we meet with them, we're not simply just setting out our expectations in a long list. It's a conversation. It's a dialogue. And, you know, we hope a relationship over time. So we often say at the start, you know, we want to listen. We want to understand the challenges those companies are facing connected with climate and also the opportunities that they can see as well. And that's part of the dynamic approach that Christy and Anna have been talking about. You think in investment and finance, we have a unique role because we can see across sectors and across markets. So good practice we see in one sector, we can communicate more widely to other companies and across sectors. And we can also see where companies and sectors connect. For example, take the extraction of gas through to its transportation via shipping, the journey through pipelines owned by specific companies, to gas power stations or direct to consumers. And we can see the role that policy and regulation plays throughout that. And it's part of our role to connect those dots, and that helps set our expectations, but also we believe it helps provide companies with roadmaps and an understanding of what investors such as ourselves expect. We say often that each part of the global economy and society needs to play its part, and we get a good perspective on how this can happen, and that informs our engagement. So it's a dynamic process while the wider market is developing and changing, and of course, while the climate is changing as well. I should say too that the expectations we set for companies are they're based on good practice and views on what an energy transition might involve, drawing from industry and other organisations. So that's a good thing to communicate to companies. And by engaging with so many companies and companies throughout the 20 sectors we focus on, we're helping communicate what investors and some of their owners at least want to see happen. And the quantitative assessment covers not only the largest companies out there, but you know, relatively smaller companies throughout the value chain, many of which may not necessarily always hear from investors on this issue. So, and again, takes me back to the point that communication is actually a very good way of assisting companies, but also the expectations are, we hope, pulling for change.
Really insightful, Stephen. Thank you. I'm going to put my last question to you. We're getting closer and closer to 2050. How hopeful are you for meaningful change?
Well, I'd say on the one hand, we're encouraged. You know, when we see the efforts that companies are making and we see the improvements through our engagement, we've learned more about that and we've been talking more about that both here and elsewhere. That's really encouraging. It's encouraging when you can see companies thinking about climate change, thinking too, by the way, about how regulation on emissions and transition might be changing and how they need to adapt. That's encouraging to see that they're thinking about this and acting. And it's encouraging when we see more disclosure, and it's encouraging when we see more action on the basis of that. More widely as well, both through our engagements and in other ways, there are some parts of the global economy where you can see the pace of change with regard to the energy transition going very quickly. Perhaps solar energy might be one example. That sort of innovation that we can see is really encouraging. And, you know, dynamic markets with dynamic investment decisions made by companies and others is really important to that. So that's the positive in our view. But still, overall, worldwide, the pace of change is, you know, far too slow. I mean, at the COP28 meeting in last year in 2023, the UN Global Stocktake highlighted just how far the world is from limiting average global temperature rise to 1.5 degrees by 2100, you know, the key Paris Agreement objective. We know that key parts of the energy economy need to shift significantly and quickly towards a timely transition. And again, you can see from the engagements that we're having through the Climate Impact Pledge that, yes, there's great change in some areas, but in some areas that, you know, there's a lot more to do. It's great to see more disclosure, but we know that more disclosure is needed, and we've been highlighting that. But at the same time, we also need the action as well. It's good to see companies focusing on, you know, far ahead in terms of what they're saying about future investment plans. But then we also need to see investment plans that are currently in place acknowledge the pace of change that's required, the decarbonisation efforts that are required. And that sense of perhaps companies waiting for something else to move and is also something that we come across, and that's why the role of policy is important. That's why the role of investors setting expectations is so important. You know, as we get closer to those net zero dates, so the conversations we're having with companies, you know, as we found over the last couple of years in particular, are becoming harder edged. That's not more difficult. It just means, you know, business strategies and climate change are becoming, you know, those conversations are becoming closer linked. And that means the conversations are, you know, rigorous, but really welcome from our point of view. And, you know, we're having real conversations about real decisions that businesses make. That's really one important part of the role of the Climate Impact Pledge. You know, we're combining the sort of assessment across those 20 climate critical sectors, well over 5,000 companies, and we're able to dive deep as well to try and drive change and disclosure and action. And that's something that, you know, we'll continue to do as, you know, we push for on behalf of our clients, we encourage companies on behalf of our clients to align with a net zero transition.
So thank you, Stephen. Clearly a lot more work to do, progressively more urgent, and Elgin wants to play a key part in reaching net zero. Thank you everyone for your time.
All information in this episode is taken from Elgin's 2024 Climate Impact Pledge. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of Legal & General Investment Management Limited, as at the date of publication. This podcast is for information purposes only, and we are not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general economic, market or political issues and/or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not an offer or recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against Legal & General in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this document contains third-party information, the accuracy and completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information, not for distribution to any person resident in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulation. Copyright 2024. Legal & General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. In Hong Kong, this material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on X, formerly known as Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.